This is an oral history interview with Dr. Rommel Hildreth, dated April 8, 1981. Dr. Hildreth is a graduate of Washington University in the class of 28. According to the information I have, he started out as a radio operator in Pacific. And for a while after he was in school, he considered the possibility of becoming a basic scientist in physiology. Dr. Hinsey said he was against it, and then he became an ophthalmologist and went into private practice. He specialized in ophthalmology. What particularly interested us in the material which we got from Dr. Hinsey through the Chancellor, Dr. Banseth, was your influence on Mr. Queeney and your work in keeping the Dempsey-Queeney fight from becoming more invasive than it actually was. According to Dr. Hinsey, you suggested him to the Provost, Mr. Pate, who was there in absence of Chancellor Elliott. Could you start by telling us how you got into the whole question and then what you did there?
Well, I'll try to follow through. I had been interested all along through my acquaintance with Mr. Queeney, and I'd been a guest in their home. And while I didn't know him intimately, and he never once said anything about the hospital.
Was he a patient of yours?
He was a patient of mine, and Mrs. Queeney was a patient of mine, and she was the main patient. He didn't need a doctor, except for routine checks, and she had some trouble. Mm-hmm. And I might say there that he spent a whole afternoon with me one time on the way back from San Francisco on her case. I wasn't operating that afternoon, so I just took the afternoon with him. And that was the first time we'd had a man-to-man talk. And he was a delightful person. And I only saw the good side. I've heard of other sides, but I must say he was a gentleman throughout, and she told me often about the evening before him coming home, and she had waited up for him, and she'd put him to bed, and the next morning he was just all tears and couldn't be nice enough. So their home life was perfectly lovely. And I throw that in because you may not get it somewhere else.
That's right.
And so again, I emphasize that I've never found a more devoted couple. Mm-hmm. Then in 1968, he died in July, I believe, and she became rather dependent upon Mrs. Hildreth and myself, and we were out there innumerable times. And then she developed a cancer of the lung, and when she died, at her request, we were the guests of her home until it was sold. And we were there for 8 months, and we got busy on the phone and got the banks to get going.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you wanted to go back to your own home.
Right, and it was delightful, and the four servants were there all the time.
How nice.
But there's no place like home.
That's right.
Now that's off the side a little bit, and how much you want to use that beside the point. Well, going back to the beginning, where my part really fitted in was August of 62. We had just returned from up north, and it was in August with a long labor day. And I said to Ms. Hildreth one day, I had a few days that I wasn't going to the office, and I said to Ms. Hildreth, I'm going to go out to see the Chancellor to see what I can do. Now, I didn't know the Chancellor, but I didn't let things like that stop me.
What was the problem that made you go out to see the Chancellor?
Well, the problem was there was a lack of get-together. That's about the best I could say.
Between whom and whom?
Between Dempsey and the board and Mr. Queeney.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Dempsey, for the record, was the dean of the medical school at that time.
So there were just simply cross purposes. And I'm told that Dempsey was walking down the hall, and Edgar came, Mr. Queenie came on the hall in the opposite direction. Dempsey would get just as far to the side as he could. He'd pass him without saying a thing.
What did Mr. Queenie want to do that Dr. Dempsey objected to, or vice versa?
Well, I can't answer that because I wasn't in on the things. It was at that stage, and I was troubled all during the vacation, so I went out on the hill, and George Pate was there in the place of the chancellor, and we became friends at once. And I spent 3 or more hours going over the whole thing, and was largely selling him Joe Hinsey. He didn't know Joe.
How did you know Joe?
Joe was a classmate of mine. I came here in 1924 and was under Joe and Dr. Trotter and one other fellow, I forget his name, and we were split up into three groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so Joe Hinsey, his name being H-I-N and mine H-I-L, when we got to chemistry, we found ourselves side by side. So he asked me to be a partner of his in physiology, and we became very fond of one another, and we did all our work in his laboratory in the building at night. And so
Hinsey was a student also class.
He was taking classes in my group, but he was working towards a PhD.
I see.
And graduated at the same time, but in neuroanatomy. And I graduated as an MD. So we were intimate friends. This is long, more than just in the classroom.
Right, yes.
So I know him as a man. And as an aside, we've been acquainted for a year or two, a couple of years at least, and he announced that he was to be married. Well, we didn't even know he had a girl. And this is the way he worked. His social life was his own. And she lived in a town 12 miles from my mother's hometown. So that brought us a little closer together. And then he asked about my aunt one time, who was in Seattle, my hometown. And it turned out that they were still corresponding. So we had any number of
girlfriends,
girlfriends, and I guess some boyfriends along the line. Well, I guess that gives enough background about
in that
Joe.
Laboratory team in physiology, he said it included Robert McNaughton of Lincoln, Illinois, and Paul Rollins of Seattle.
Yes,
that sounds like a very distinguished team.
Yeah. Well, Bob McNaughton is dead. He's and. Paul hasn't
done much.
Well, I'll let it go at that. He's blind in one eye and he can't see out of the other, and I guess I better not say any more.
what made you decide against becoming a basic scientist in physiology and went into clinical work instead?
Well, actually, when I finished high school, I had the love for the sea. My home was in Seattle. And I had no thought of giving up medicine. I decided at 10 years old of age I was going to be an eye doctor.
Oh.
And I was going to make a living. If I could make a living in eye, I wouldn't do the nose and throat. Well, I've since found out that's very easy. And now in the eye, we have branches, of course.
Yes. Yes.
The full-time, the part-time, and then there's the retinal service and so on. So that was in the beginning. Then I got in with Joe, and I was fascinated by physiology because of Dr. Erlanger. And we became very close friends, and he was my patient until he died. And I took him up and showed him my radio one time. And you want all this?
Yes, indeed. Very interesting. Did you make that radio yourself?
No, I didn't make it. It's the finest radio you could buy. I bought it. And I could get everything in the world.
And in the 20s, there weren't very many stations that were broadcasting.
Well, these were stations of communication.
Oh.
They're ship stations.
I see.
And then when I went in to amateur radio, well, then I was in communication with amateur radio stations all over the world, but not with ships and not with broadcast stations. And we were signaling entirely by dots and dashes. So now, to this day, I have the same set, and I listen to my dots and dashes, but it's just plain English. Somebody out west asked about my wife, and I'm not exchanging ideas other than in English, but they're transmitted by dots and dashes. And I've had it so long that I don't stop to think that. And one time, a man asked me, this is when I was at sea, asked me a question in which the answer was yes or no. And I answered by my mouth, yes. And then I laughed at myself and I tapped out the why, yes. So that shows how realistic it is.
You were in at sea. You were actually on the ships when you were a radio operator.
That's right.
For how long did this happen?
I spent over my license was signed over a 4-year period, but I got 2 years of medicine in between. I stayed out of school 2 years to get the license. I had to go to school and then get it, and then. During my 2 years, excuse my language, I've had a partial stroke and
very clear, there's no problem.
So when 1922 came along, I was going back to school. I'd had my 2 years. But then I had my summers, and I was off. So I made my last trip to the Orient on a ship that I'd been on before. They needed an operator, and I got on just in time. And during that time, the Japanese earthquake of 1923 took place.
Yes.
And the communication of that day, and still is such that you could work better from 12 o'clock, a given time, midnight, till 4. And that was my watch, from 12 to 4 at noon and at midnight. But it took me 3 nights. I talked direct to San Francisco. I'd call him, and then it's just as though the shade came down, and you couldn't hear it, and then I'd call him the next night at midnight, and it took 3 nights to get, but that was the first uncensored news of the earthquake. The earthquake was all censored, and we got nothing at all. So that was a long story.
How did you get uncensored news? I understood the Japanese...
At 3-mile limit. The 3-mile limits was maintained then. And once we were outside of the 3-mile limits, then...
But how did you get the information? Did the Japanese give it to you?
No, a press man. He was an American. Came aboard and filed one stuck after another, yards of messages.
Yes, I understand the Japanese were very suspicious of anybody who was carrying that out.
But it was perfectly legal. So I sent that message.
That must have been very exciting. Well, we've gotten off the story of Queenie and Dempsey.
Well, you may want to cut some of this out.
You went to see Provost George Pake because Chancellor Elliott was not there, and you suggested to him that he get an outside consultant. Was that what
it
was?
I told my wife that I thought something could be done and should be done through the Chancellor's office.
Yeah.
This is terribly important. I foresaw we all know now, but I foresaw it at the time. And I didn't say anything to anybody except Miss Hilda, and went out there, and I got to see George Pake. And here he took his long yellow pad, and he scribbled as fast as he could all the time I was talking. And that was over 3 hours. But it's all in regard to, he may have thrown some questions in, but it was in regard to the life of Joe Henze and what he meant to the school. He didn't graduate from here, but he had his love for this school, and his first 2 years were here and so on. So that was the beginning of a, well, it was the beginning and end. I said to George, don't let this thing soar you. I'm out of it. I just want to pass this along and just forget it. And I didn't hear from him until March, I believe it was, over the winter anyway. And he just sent a message. I think her afternoon paid off.
Was Hensley then at Cornell?
Hensley was Cornell, yes.
Cornell. Did you also know Knowles, who was involved in
Knowles surprised me. He was a student here,
mm-hmm.
but the teaching I did was then in the operating room,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't show up there as a student, and he wasn't going to be an eye doctor.
Mm-hmm.
So I missed the pleasure of getting to know him, and so the committee was around Joe and Knowles.
Mm-hmm. Knowles was at the Massachusetts General Hospital.
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. But you did not suggest him.
No, I didn't suggest. I my heart was stringing along on Joe.
Uh-huh.
And he was the main one, of course.
You think that he could, that Hensley could have done it all by himself if they didn't have
him? I think so.
Why then do you think they asked Knowles?
Well, again, these are my own private...
Yes.
I think it was a good idea to ask Knowles. He was a graduate of the school.
Mm-hmm.
He was younger than Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And it lent one more man to the committee.
Mm-hmm. Did Hensley and Knowles know each other before they came here?
I just don't know, but I'm sure he did.
Mm-hmm. And when they came here, what did they do? Did they have any... list of things which the university wanted them to look into, or how were they briefed as to what their job here was?
Well,
you know?
I cannot answer any of those because I wasn't supposed to be in on this
thing.
I see. And I had no official capacity
mm-hmm.
in going
well,
out there.
That often makes the best kind.
And I think if anybody thought I was interested, they may have pulled me in. But I saw no reason for giving my name.
It seems to me that Judge Otto is mentioned somewhere in here as being part of this group. Do you? Who was Judge Otto? Did you know him?
Yes, I met him. Judge Otto was the light behind. Oh, excuse me. The light behind Edgar.
Oh.
Edgar is a very, very strong man,
mm-hmm.
and judge, and he had to have somebody to speak up for him if he were out of town. But Judge Otto took a very, very lesser light.
I see.
It was not a same character as Queenie, and I think he merely acted as a second man.
Dr. Hensley says that during the time that Queenie and Mrs. Queenie were associated with Hildreth, Hildreth played an important role in helping in some of the problems which arose. What problems arose, do you remember?
Well, again, there was nothing that Edgar said to me about the hospital that I remember. When I say the hospital, I mean the whole situation. And I don't remember anything. And Mrs. Queenie told me everything. Well, I was a friend. I was her doctor. I saw her often in the office. And her condition was controlled and required only medication. But it was just endless medication and had to be changed from time to time. So I saw her regularly, and so she took a liking to me, and she just bared her soul.
Yeah. Father Confessor. According to Hensley, he came and in the early spring of 63, Barnes Hospital asked, and Washington asked, University asked if he would agree to join Dr. Knowles in a study and survey to make recommendations. And he came the Thursday before Easter, and he did his interviews through Tuesday after Easter. That's a very short period. That's only about 5 days. How did he get all the information he needed in 5 days? Do you have any idea?
Well, a lot of it would go back to the fact that he had gone to school here. So they knew the workings very well.
That was 20 years earlier.
Well, that isn't very long.
Maybe 40 years earlier.
I'm remembering this. And it seems like a million years ago.
Well, I
just couldn't think of this. I'm getting it really cold.
Mm-hmm,
this.
Mm-hmm.
But Joe is a very intense character.
Mm-hmm.
And he would remember every bit of the things that he did. And he could speak from the heart.
He apparently made a report which bothered the executive faculty very much. He said that Dr. Dempsey characterized it as a scurrilous report, critical of everything in it.
Well, let me tell you one. This is one thing I do remember. I was in my office, and I was busy in those days. And about 11 o'clock in the morning, Joe came in.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Joe's a gentleman throughout, but he came busting in. I can't think of any other word. And he's a great big fellow, enormous man. And the crowd just had to get to the waiting room, anybody that was in there. And he sat down. He just didn't see them.
Mm-hmm.
They just didn't exist. And for one half hour, I had to sit and listen to him. And as mainly matter, that man Dempsey, I've never been talked to by a man like Dempsey before, said he.
Mm-hmm.
And he repeated that. And so I presume that was his response to this other. He knew me so well that he could blow off like that.
He said they were really drawn over the coals for the recommendations we had made. And the one that was most severely criticized was that there should be a vice chancellor for health affairs. He apparently was very unhappy at the conduct of that meeting. You say he came in and talked to you.
Well, he was anything but a gentleman that morning in relation to what had been said.
It's too bad we don't have the other side to find out what was said. Do you know who was on Dempsey's side, who agreed to Dempsey's point of view?
No, I just
was
don't
it
know.
Dr. Lacey or Dr. Lowry or Carl Moore, Moyer, Allen, and Corey? They're all mentioned in the letter.
Moore, I remember. Is he alive now?
No, he's dead.
I thought so.
Uh-huh.
And I just don't know the other men. But the other men weren't strong characters.
These were all department heads from the executive faculty.
Uh-huh.
Lacey in pathology and Lowry in pharmacology.
Well, Lowry I knew a little.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not one to speak their mind.
Uh-huh.
And I'm just talking.
Mm-hmm.
He's alive, is he not?
Yes, Lowry is alive, and so is Lacey. All the others, some of them are alive, but they're not here at the medical
yes.
school anymore.
But Lowry, I think he'd speak his mind,
mm-hmm.
but I think he would be led to take the side of the executive faculty.
Mm-hmm. Well, he was a member of the executive.
He was a member, and so he'd speak it. So I'm not so sure it would be completely clear.
Mm-hmm.
If you know what I mean.
What did Dr. Knowles say, Dr. Hinsey say to you was the main thrust of the things that he objected to? What did Dempsey say that made him so mad?
He didn't say,
uh-huh.
other than he'd never been talked to by a man, regardless of who it was, in the tone that man had talked to him.
He says in his letter that Dr. Dempsey implied the incompetency of the two consultants.
Well, that may be true. I just don't remember all that. The main thing I got was that
they treated him badly.
Treated badly, yes.
He says that he and Dr. Knowles met that evening, and he told Dr. Knowles he wasn't going to stand for this, and he wasn't going to appear before the faculty the next day. And then he was talked out of that.
Well, he may have. So he came to me directly from the meeting,
mm-hmm.
and he probably told me a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
And I was trying to get him out.
Calm so you could see your patient.
Yeah, and I was in a squeeze up there. Well, I was going out and operate that afternoon, mm-hmm. and to satisfy 40 people in the waiting room. So I just don't remember, although I was taking it all in.
Yeah. Well, apparently Dr. Knowles convinced him that he should go to the meeting. And
Knowles was a very, very fine person, but I just didn't know him directly.
He must have had a sense of humor, because Hinsey says he came into that meeting with a briefcase and a family revolutionary sword, as if he were going to war. And I guess it was a war between the two factions.
Well, that was a real, that was a bitter debate.
Mm-hmm.
I got that much out of it. I'd never seen Joe anything like that. He was always lots of fun. He was pure science. We were students together all that time, you see, and so we always had something to talk about. Now, this is some period in between.
Mm-hmm.
Heavens knows from 20 to
yeah,
60.
40 years, yeah.
But he seemed the same to me, and I seemed the same to him.
One of the interesting things I remember, Dr. Dempsey was here when I first came, and he felt very aggrieved on this matter, because he thought that he was representing the executive faculty.
Mm-hmm.
And when it came to the showdown, the executive faculty, he said, did not back him up. Instead, agreed that the Hinsey-Knowles suggestion was the one to be accepted.
Yes.
And he felt that he'd been arguing, thinking he was arguing for a group that then turned around against him.
I haven't heard this, but I've seen the results since that day, and things began to iron out that had hitherto been piling up up.
Yes.
And I felt very good. I felt all these years, and the first time I've ever spoken of George Pate.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that was the beginning of the straightening out period. So I didn't play a big part, but I played a little part.
Well,
anyway.
I think you played a very good part. They were just tearing their hair trying to decide what to do. It had another effect, of course, Dr. Hildreth. It brought the medical school and the university closer together.
Yes, yes.
Where before they had been going along on parallel but separate paths. Do you think that's a good idea, to have the universities more closely allied to the medical school?
Oh, yes. This here, a large part of the faculty is the same.
Mm-hmm.
And one person can't be torn between two places. So I feel that it...
You say a large part of the medical school faculty is on the from the main campus?
No, at the main part of the faculty at Barnes.
I see.
Is the faculty here.
Uh-huh.
For instance, I interned at Barnes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I didn't realize, I didn't realize any change.
Yes.
I just went right on with my education.
The people appointed to Barnes have got to have the approval of the medical school.
Yes.
What I was talking about was the main campus where Pake and Elliott were, as opposed to the medical campus.
Uh-huh.
This brought the university involved in the problems of the medical school, where they had not been so involved in the past.
Well, undoubtedly, they are closer.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't speak with so much feeling, but the proof of the pudding is what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And this came about, and they have been closer together.
What else about the relationship between Queenie and Dempsey and that fight, could you tell us?
Well, the only thing, and this is of no consequence, I knew of a meeting that was taking place on a given day. I think it's before Joe Hinsey and that committee was out here. And I was on a vacation in Arizona for 3 or 4 days to get away from the telephone. And I called Edgar at dinner and was told that he couldn't answer the phone. I said, well, this is long distance, and it's very important.
Mm-hmm.
And I've since lived in the home, and I know why. But Edgar got up and answered the phone. Mm-hmm. I didn't have anything to tell him. I said, just keep on talking.
Mm-hmm.
I knew him well enough to know what he might say. He probably wouldn't say anything. And I said, just keep talking. Keep it going.
Mm-hmm.
And hung up. So that's...
You wanted him to keep on talking to the other group.
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. Hoping some good would come out. He was very quiet at the meetings.
What did Queenie want that Dempsey did not like?
I just can't tell you. I haven't heard anybody put that in words. I just don't know. I'm not holding back. I just don't know.
Yes, I'm trying to remember what Dr. Dempsey told me. He was just about as mad about that as Dr. Hinsey, and he and I liked martinis, and occasionally we would go out and have a martini together. And at one point he was telling me about it, and I think one of the things he felt was that Queenie was going to make a business out of Barnes Hospital like Monsanto rather than a research institute, mm-hmm. which the medical school was interested in. Did you have any feeling like that?
Well, I've heard some of that afterwards. That does bring something to mind. And again, this is very vague, mm-hmm. but I do recall hearing something like that. Sorry. And that Queenie did finally decide that was not for the school. So Dempsey must have won his point there.
There was one point at which Barnes Hospital was threatening to pull out of the medical center,
yes.
Which would have been a terrible thing in many respects. Do you know anything about that?
No, other than I just heard it.
Mm-hmm.
I was very, very busy in those days.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean I didn't have time for this. But I just didn't know my own soul. And I was trying to keep a lot of souls. I was operating every afternoon, and mornings were busy. And so I just didn't hear as much as I should have.
Well, apparently, whatever the recommendations were, they seem to have worked because the Barnes Hospital and the medical school seems to have gotten together pretty well. Do you know what other recommendations they made besides the vice chancellor for medical affairs?
That's the one thing I've heard. Of course, mm-hmm. it's very obvious.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a royal choice,
mm-hmm.
because the man went on and headed up the university.
Well,
the
that was the second
guy.
One.
Oh, yes.
Because Carl Moore was the first
one.
Yeah.
Well, Carl didn't live very long afterwards. And I'd forgotten about that. But anyway, we've got a good chancellor.
Yes, yes.
And he's a graduate of Washington University Medical School.
Yes, yes. And a good cardiologist, too.
I think he's too good a man to be a doctor, but... I mean, not to be a doctor, but the few could take his place.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he's an all-around renaissance
man. He's a great man. Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons that this whole question between Queenie and Dempsey came to the fore was that they had to renew the contract that kept Barnes Hospital and the medical school together.
Mm-hmm.
The medical center here, as you know better than I, is in a very peculiar situation in that each hospital is a separate legal entity, and they make an agreement with each other and with the school about what they're going to do and who will pay for what. That's a very unusual situation. Since the report of Hinsey and Knowles, they have appointed a overall medical center board. Do you know whether that was one of their recommendations?
I didn't know that, no.
The reason I think that might have been in their report is that that is what they have at Cornell.
Mm-hmm.
When they built the present medical center at Cornell, my father was on the faculty and my brother was on the faculty later. when they moved it to where it is now, with the New York Hospital and Payne Whitney and all the other hospitals, they arranged for a board which was over all of the institutions. And it seems to have worked out well there, and I wondered if Dr. Hinsey may have suggested the same thing here.
Well, if it's a good thing, I'd say that Dr. Hinsey did it, but I do not know at all. Sounds like him anyway.
Yeah, it seems to have worked out, and it's been taken over by other places. Is there anything else that that you know about this incident, or about any other part of the history of the medical center that we should have for posterity?
Well, I don't know. I just feel that they were very. It was a lucky day for me when they took me in.
Oh, it was lucky for them that they did.
I came here with a deficiency, an academic deficiency, of 1 point in French.
Oh dear.
And I really worried all summer about that. So I came on back, and so the registrar then was Myrtle Heidman's wife, and she was a lovely, lovely person. She wrote by hand a letter admitting me with that deficiency, and I've never forgotten her. I've never had a chance to tell her. I don't even know whether she's alive, but I came here imagining that some professor out the on the hill would flunk me right off, and yet I felt that I could read French pretty well. So the dean of 1924,
Schaefer?
No, that's before him.
Doc?
No, as after Doc. A very large fellow. He was a pediatrician.
Marriott?
Yes, Dean Marriott. This very last woman took me in to meet Dr. Marriott and said, "Well, can you read French?" And I said, "Yes." And he said, "Well, sit down here, and here's a French book." It was English. I mean, it was pediatrics.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another one in chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
And then here's a dictionary. You have to have a dictionary.
Yeah.
Well, what could be easier? So I just said, my vocabulary didn't fit any one of those. So I just proceeded to look up words. So he came back about a half an hour. He said, "I'll stop in now and then." And he said, "Oh, well, that's too much work." He said, "Sit down and I'll fill in the words." Well, about 5 minutes, he said, "Well, you can read French, and that's all there is to it." So I think that's enough.
Well, that's very nice. When you were here, some of the great faculty members were here. You mentioned Erlanger, and you mentioned Marriott.
I almost went into full-time Dr. Erlanger's field,
mm-hmm,
because of him.
Mm-hmm.
I loved anatomy. Mm-hmm. I just ate it up. And I got 100. He was my, he had my section.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd come around to end the hour and show me where his little red book.
Mm-hmm.
I'd heard about that red book. And he had 100 every time until just before Christmas. And he had a 95. Oh, I was crestfallen. I didn't expect to make it. If I'd gotten past, mm-hmm, I would have been glad.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that he had 100 down there, that was my mark. And so anatomy, and there's a specimen up there on permanent display all these years that I made.
Dr. Terry was then the chairman of the department.
Yes.
Did he teach you, or was it Dr. Trotter?
She was just here.
Uh-huh. She just come.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
A lot of good guys come.
Yes, that's what I'm trying to get at. And how was Dr. Graham? What kind of a teacher was he?
I didn't get into his work very much until the third year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he was a fine teacher, and then I interned under him.
Uh-huh.
You want to take all this
yes,
time?
Yes, we have all his material. They left it to the library.
Well, in my third year, Dr. Barr called in three of us.
Dr. Barr was in the Department of Internal Medicine.
He was
head
of the Department of Medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And there were two other students and myself
mm-hmm.
were called in individually. And he offered me a job as a student...
clerk?
Well, a chance to do some research, but that always led to the internship
yeah.
in medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And just then the phone rang, and he was called, and he stepped aside to the other room. But while he was there, I thought, well, I'm going to stick my guns. I had applied to Dr. Graham,
mm-hmm.
and I found that over half the class had applied for that job. And so I never spent such a miserable time. Well, I told Dr. Graham, Dr. Barr, that I had applied to Dr. Graham, and I didn't feel that I could turn it down,
mm-hmm.
although I hadn't heard from him. And Dr. Barr was never very nice to me after that. This is about the... early in the spring of our final year. And but that would assure that I could go on to school. I just didn't know where I could get the tuition for the
mm-hmm.
final
yeah.
year. So I went on home, still not hearing from Dr. Graham, and I guess everybody wondered why I was so quiet. But that was the reason.
Mm-hmm.
I was determined. I was well enough along, and I had done well in school and all. So it was proper that I was to be a doctor, but I hadn't heard that application. Well, I would have found the money somehow there, but I hated to ask.
Yeah.
There's a doctor who's sort of a good friend of mine, and so about a week later, a letter came from Dr. Graham, and there was the appointment. So I was all right all summer then.
How was he as a head of the department? The interns, some of them had pretty difficult times with him.
Well. I hit it off with him very well,
mm-hmm.
right along.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that happened to me, that year, this is the senior year now,
mm-hmm.
and but early that fall, there was a Dr. I.Y. Oates who was in
yes.
his department.
He came back with a last year visit with
yes.
us.
He's a fine man,
mm-hmm.
very fine man. He's out of California,
yeah, California.
My wife and I visited
mm-hmm.
from them. He always sent us a letter. And... he was working. I can see him upstairs in the lab. He had a projector made out of a microscope. You can buy them now,
yeah,
but
yeah.
He didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
And he had it upside on the side,
mm-hmm.
and it would project
mm-hmm.
a slide,
mm-hmm.
just a tissue slide,
yeah.
or
mm-hmm.
cells.
Mm-hmm.
But he didn't get he got a poor picture. He said, I've been working on this thing 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, excuse me just a second, I'm going out. So I unplugged it and turned it over and put it back. I said, it works. I didn't try it and all, but he had polarity.
Oh, yeah.
It was direct
uh-huh.
current and polarity on.
Uh-huh.
And I just took a chance because I knew electricity.
Uh-huh.
This was born in me, practically. I was doing that around Seattle with a reflector when I was 10 years old.
Uh-huh.
So he came back. I could still see the foot going around uh-huh. the hall when I told him. So he came back, and it worked.
Mm-hmm.
And he told Dr. Graham that. So that was it. That was all of that. But this, about 10 years later, I was in practice, and Dr. Graham became a patient of mine.
Oh.
And he was talking and visiting along and so on. And I saw him out here rather than go down to my office.
Mm-hmm.
And he recalled that incident, and he said, you may not remember it. Well, I did.
Yeah.
But he explained it all to me, and I didn't let on.
And
I didn't
you knew
remember
about it. I think people like Dr. Anderson, who are so young, who didn't have anything to do with direct current, don't understand this problem. But that was one we had very often when I was growing up.
Yeah. And so he told me about it. Well, that was very impressive to Dr. Graham
yes.
and to Dr. Olds.
Uh-huh.
He'd been working for 2 weeks
yes.
and get the double image
uh-huh.
on that. And I wouldn't be surprised, that had a lot to do with my internship in surgery.
Mm-hmm.
Although I already had it then, but
mm-hmm.
that was one more thing that...
And made him sure he picked the right person.
So
who was in charge of ophthalmology?
Dr. Howard. He was a very tall man. He had spent some time in China,
mm-hmm.
and he wrote a book, 10 Weeks with the Bandits.
Mm-hmm.
Does that remind you?
Well, that, of course, was all the Kuo Mun-ting of the time and so on.
Well, it tells all about Dr. Howard. You don't need to believe a bit.
Was that the Cowdery here at the time talking about China? He was at Peking Union Medical College before he came to the anatomy department here. I guess maybe it was after that.
Calgary rings a bell. Was there another department that he was chief of at the time?
Well, they divided the anatomy department up into two parts, and Terry took one, and Cowdery took histology and embryology.
I knew Cowdery.
Uh-huh.
I was through school then.
Yes.
But I knew him, yes.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Was Mary in charge of pediatrics?
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh.
He was dean for a while,
mm-hmm.
but he was head of the department over there.
Yeah. Was Doc here at this time he'd gone by some
mm-hmm.
time? Who else do you remember from those?
Well, I've told about Barr, and that's about the only contact I had with him, and I was off his list from then on. I didn't care as long as I heard from Dr. Graham.
Yeah, yeah.
There were only two of us that got the position,
mm-hmm.
and I got the surgical internship.
Did you know Dr. Helen Graham?
Yes, she was a student of mine.
Okay.
She was a classmate of mine.
Oh.
We asked her why. She had her freshman year,
mm-hmm.
and then she had her children,
mm-hmm.
and then she had her sophomore year,
mm-hmm.
and she came back then with our class, and we were with her a great deal. Our groups were right together, and she was a lovely, lovely person. I knew Helen very well,
mm-hmm.
whereas you didn't. Well, you just weren't associated with Dr. Graham.
Yeah, yeah,
and,
they're very different people.
Mrs. Hildreth. I was married 5 minutes after I got to school, and then we told the family about her mother, knew all about it. Her mother was going to have a baby, and it was the thing to do. She blessed us, and they called her every night and so on, but the father wouldn't have approved. So Helen was very much there, a warmer person,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
but... Dr. Graham was going to operate on a boy. My wife was in social service department,
mm-hmm.
and had been the social worker on this student. He had his heart going to his lungs, to his chest wall. And so Dr. Graham was going to crack the ribs free,
mm-hmm.
so that he would have a free heart to move. And it was a glamorous thing to see. And I don't know where the old amphitheater is there, but it comes down to pretty small and goes way, way up. It isn't used for that purpose now. But it was hot up there. It was a hot day. It was in the summertime. And I was on the team. And I looked up and I saw my wife and she waved. And I looked back and I had to hang on. I looked back a few moments later when I had a chance and she was gone. Now, the steps that were in back were almost like a ladder, and as straight down, and I had vision of my bride falling head first all the way down, and I wanted to say, Dr. Graham, may I go out and see if my wife's all right, but I didn't do that, and it wasn't done, at least, and she came through all right, but she had enough.
Fainted,
well,
or
she went out.
She went out
for us and fainted.
Well, is there anything else that you...
Those were the prominent men. Dr. Loeb, L-O-E-B,
mm-hmm.
was head of pathology,
mm-hmm.
and did a very, very good job. But he's not a colorful character, at least in the everyday work.
Mm-hmm.
There's nobody in physiology that began to do what Dr. Erlanger did.
Did you know Dr. Gasser, too?
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
He left just about that time, but he was in charge of pharmacology my second year.
Uh-huh.
It was a separate department.
I didn't realize that Gasser was not in the physiology department.
Yeah, it was a separate department,
mm-hmm.
the pharmacology department,
yes.
and I believe it is now.
Yes, but I didn't know that Gasser was in
yes.
it. I thought he was with Erlanger all the time.
No, that was a separate department at
uh-huh.
that time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I almost think that my earlier years, my first 2 years, the men stood out better than the later years, except for Dr. Graham.
Uh-huh. You mean the preclinical faculty was better than the clinical faculty?
And I happen to certain things would come up. Well, I can't think of any incidences, but Dr. Sachs, I must forget.
Mm-hmm. In obstetrics?
Neuroanatomy. Neurology, neurosurgery. Mm-hmm. He was head of surgery. That was a separate department, but it was under Dr. Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a strong personality. And one day he recalled the week before we'd had a visiting man. His surgery was on the bone, and so Sachs asked three or four of the fellows, brought him down the pit and gave him thunder and sent him back. Asked which one, what was the main thing he got out of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's one thing that would make the diagnosis, and nobody said anything. So I put up my hand, and I said, X-ray.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you're right.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got in with Sachs, and so we were thrown together quite a little.
Was Dr. Schwartz here when you were here in obstetrics?
No. In obstetrics, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, I'll take it back.
Mm-hmm.
I took the obstetrics,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
The classmate, but I wasn't interested in going on.
Mm-hmm.
That wasn't my field.
If you wanted to specialize in those days, were there any special courses and intensive work that you could take, or did you all have to take exactly the same courses?
Well, we went through almost the same thing, fundamentally the same. In our third year, there was a little chance to branch off, and yet there wasn't time for all of them,
mm-hmm.
and so you take certain ones,
mm-hmm.
and I took a little eye, I think.
Did you have anything to do with City Hospital or any other hospital?
No, I wasn't down there at all.
Uh-huh.
I've lived entirely out here at Barnes.
Barnes,
mm-hmm.
yes. Well, I think very good experience indeed. Well, we're very grateful to you for taking the time and for telling us all of this, and we'll put it in with all the other oral histories we have so that the scholars in the future will be able to get all sides of the discussion.
Well, it's been lots of fun, but you better take some of it out.
Oh, well, we'd like to have all of it. Thank you very much.
I'm afraid it wasn't altogether what you wanted.
Well, it gave us another point of view on the problems which we have heard about.